Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. Everything from the ethical use of artificial intelligence and cybersecurity and its impacts in these communities to collaborative projects that deserve recognition for their success. The Sounds of Safety podcast is your comprehensive resource for these topics and stories moving forward. Thanks for tuning in and for your support of our collective community. Enjoy today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast presented by the IGIS Institute. On today's episode, IGIS would like to welcome two members of our Justice and Public Safety Advanced Analytics Committee. We have the Chair, Casey Roussel, President and CCO of FusionStack, who will speak to retired Police Chief Carl Wilmes about changes that analytics has on law enforcement operations. Casey and Carl will detail how technologies like body cameras have changed operations within the law enforcement community over the years, showing the impacts of these new advances within the mission-critical space. Let's get started and enjoy the episode.
All right, welcome everybody to today's show. I've got a very special guest here with me today, Mr. Carl Wilmes. Carl is a retired police chief from the great state of Colorado. He's also was a former head of Homeland Security Director for the state of Colorado, and a deputy director for the Colorado Bureau of Investigations. With it, he is now a very successful consultant that works and helps with law enforcement agencies as they navigate through the challenging times dealing with technology, data sharing, all sorts of issues today. So one of the things that we're going to talk about, and first, hey, welcome, Carl. Thanks for taking the opportunity or the time to participate with us today. It's great having you here. So I think the thing that we want to look at today is talking about how technology has changed operations within the law enforcement industry. A lot of the things that we see deals with what the public knows versus what's actually reality. A lot of distortions from what we see on TV and in the movies, that sort of thing. But you have firsthand experience back from your days early starting, I'm assuring, when everything was paper, all the way up to now where we have some very advanced technology going on. So again, thank you. And I'm going to kind of like turn this over to you for a second to really just, one, say hello and also talk about some of the big things that you've seen over your career of how technology has changed. And then maybe after that, we can dive into some of the particulars.
Okay, great. Thank you, Casey. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. You know, law enforcement has changed dramatically in the last few years, and really kind of some of the driving forces to make it a little bit better will be, in my opinion, technology. I'm a little different than some of the police chiefs around the country or the sheriffs around the country or some of the academians, because I really believe that law enforcement has to be the focal point for safer cities. To that end, policing is a real-time job. And so one of the things that technology provides for us is data. And, you know, data and immediate access data is really going to change the focus of what we do in police work, I think. As I look back on my career, and especially Casey leading, you know, three different agencies in Colorado, I really had three North Star values. And I think the first one is safety and security of the community. And technology can help there. A police chief or a sheriff or an executive or whatever role you are there, you really do have to make an attempt to listen to your citizens. And I think some of the problems when we get into it a little more today, you know, trust and those relationships, it's because law enforcement leaders don't take the time to listen to their community. But that safety and security for the community, as I reminded all of the officers and when I was a police chief, is you take an oath of office, and that safety and security is important. And you as the leader, you have to, not only do you take an oath of office, but you have to lead by using that oath of office is what I'm trying to say. And I think sometimes the community, we lose our trust because we've all taken that oath of office. We've all raised our right hand and we've failed to live up to that. I think the other North Star thing in police work or law enforcement that I always try to live by is you have to take care of your staff. And technology can help us with that too. And that's not just the officers or the deputies in the field. You have to take care of, in today's world, with the stress that goes on. You know, sometimes it's the dispatchers. Sometimes it's the call takers. Sometimes it's the records management people. When there's an incident that happens in the police department, it really does affect all of us from the top all the way down. And oftentimes it affects the clerical staff, the administrative staff, even more than you might think. So One of the jobs I really think of a leader in law enforcement is to take care of your staff. And there's a lot of things we can do, I think, in technology to do that. And finally, I think what we fail to do sometimes in government, but I'm a big believer in this, is we have to be a good fiduciary of taxpayers' dollars. You know, I think sometimes when you see, it doesn't matter what city that you're in, and you see things that, well, hey, that's kind of a waste of taxpayers' dollars. And if you can't justify it to the taxpayers, then really, you know, why are you buying it? So a lot of times we buy toys that we don't need. A lot of times we spend money the wrong way. But I think technology can help us do a better job at that. Because at the end of the day, that comes part and parcel with the trust too, really. If we're wasting money, the first thing that the taxpayers will say, well, why are they doing that? Why are they spending so much money on overtime? Why are they spending so much money on here? Can't they do a little bit better job? We've entrusted them to take care of our city and our tax base, but you're kind of wasting the money. And as soon as you do that, you really start compromising that trust, and that goes a long way. So those are kind of my ideas. Now, really, I think what you hear a lot about in policing today is video, and that's the new word to help us with transparency. And I think that does help us a lot from two different stages. So the media is always quick to criticize us in law enforcement. And I think that sometimes we have to remember that those one or two events, we always try to look at those from a global picture and not let those happen again. But I think what we do wrong is sometimes we don't tell the great story that the officers do each and every day. And I think video can help us a lot with that. I think there's more things that we can do with video, more than just video. Maybe we can talk about some of those. But I think, and I'll throw it back to you, what I want to say really about all of this technology, and I think we missed the boat here, is we don't start with good policy. And if you look at some great examples across the country, we have some great tools in law enforcement to help you, the citizens. Some of it is called license plate readers, facial recognition, and all of those things. And all of those currently have kind of a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth right now. And it's really because of bad policy. And I think that law enforcement, sometimes we're our worst enemies. We rolled that stuff out. We used it. And we didn't have good policy to back it up. And we compromised the trust of the citizens. And I think we have to globally think everything that we do first, how is that going to be viewed with the citizens? Going back to those three value statements, I think that safety and security in our community.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful, Cole. Two things you pointed out that I'd like to talk a little more about. First was your second point with staffing and how that's used. Because I think now, finally, we're at this junction where technology used to be a luxury for departments to, you know, forward thinking, try to figure out how can I get some of this, where now it seems like a lot more of a necessity, where almost every department, doesn't matter where you go in the country, everyone is understaffed. No one has enough people to do the job and provide the services to the citizens. So I think now this is where that bridge comes in to say, okay, how can I use technology to make my officers, make my department much more efficient and effective and eliminate some of what I used to do manually that took a lot of time and effort. I mean, you know, how much time does officers spend manually filling out reports and manually bringing documents in from place to place? You know, the technology has really, from in-car laptops, MDTs, to different reporting systems, case management systems, all of this sort of stuff with it. But there's still a lot of opposition. There's still a lot of police departments out there and sheriffs that have been a little hesitant to say, this is kind of how we've always done it, kind of been on the old school. But now it seems the technology, if you're not embracing it, if you're not deploying it to the best of that you can, you're really falling behind on what you can deliver. And one of the arguments that I'll get your thoughts on was, it was always, okay, funding, how are we going to pay for this? Like, I don't have money in a big technology budget. Well, you see now, with the budget that you have for hiring people that you can't fill these jobs, let's reroute that money to technology and let's deploy technology to help us there. So what's your thoughts on how important do you think it is for agencies to embrace technology?
Well, I think it goes
to solve some of these staffing issues.
Exactly to your point. Technology will help you with staffing issues. And the other thing that, you know, as a police chief or a sheriff, you cannot continue to go back to city council or to the county commissioners and say, hey, we need more cops. We need more cops. We need more cops. Cops are expensive. And so what we have to do is think outside the box a little bit and use technology to help us with that a little bit. And part of that could be technology with predictive policing. Part of it is some of the things we're doing at IGIS with analytics and information sharing and situational awareness. All of those things are important for us when you try to manage a department every single day. There's no reason in the world that in a police department today, when I started, and this goes back a ways, when we tried to do some analytics, what we used to do is have a big map in the detective room, and then we'd put little pins. And then, you had a lot of pins. Well, that was your analytics, and that's where you need to prevent crime by putting patrol officers there or assigning a detective over here. And now we have the luxury of where we can have the tools really on public-private partnerships together to be able to do that with instant real time. And that saves a lot of staff time by just doing some analytics and predictive policing. One of the things that helps not only the community, but it helps the officers in life safety, and not just officers. I mean, we can take it outside law enforcement a little bit too, Casey, and we can look at our fire departments and those different kinds of things, is that information sharing. And we need to do a better job at information sharing, because that also reduces not only the liability to the city, it increases life safety for both the citizens and the officers, and it really does make a difference. The other point that you made is kind of the recruitment and retention. We expect more from our police officers now than we ever did before. Sometimes they're psychiatrists, and sometimes they're law enforcement officers. Sometimes they're mediators, and you never know from call to call to call what they're going to face. And so I think that we have to have the latest tools for that too, and that helps. Now, officers, coming out of the police academies now, they've grown up with a smartphone. And if you don't have the correct tools for them, not only are they behind with how they do their job, but it also has a reflection on the department. They're not keeping up with the times. So in police work and in any agency or any corporation across the country, your number one asset is your human capital. And a lot of times we go through all of these gyrations and backgrounds and all that stuff to bring them on. And we bring them on and we put them in the car and we forget about them. But you got to keep them updated too with the tools, the great tools that you have in technology. Otherwise, you'll lose them and your department will fall behind. And people will transition to a department that is thought of and has a great reputation. So, part of recruitment and training is to ensure that your department is modernized and that you take care of your people and that you have a great reputation. And I think if you have those three things, that some of those recruitment things that we hear about across the nation will kind of go away.
Yeah, it's definitely one thing that we've noticed, not only from the officer side, but also the court side. A lot of these new officers, new judges, when they come in, they fully expected to be able to do the vast majority of their job from a cell phone. If they can't do that job from those mobile devices, you lose their interest really quick, especially if you start asking them to manually fill out paperwork. We've really seen officers use that as a key part of, and now with today's environment, it's the best market ever. If you're a cop, if you want to be a cop, you actually have your pick of the litter of where you want to go work. Exactly. You're not forced to go work for a certain agency. You can really shop around, especially if you're willing to relocate. You can find the departments that offer the best, not only benefits and pay, but the best tools to be able to do your job with it. Technology has become a really good recruiting tactic and tool used, like you mentioned, on it. One other thing you mentioned with video, I agree with you. This was always an argument that I don't know how much it's now anymore, but up until probably 5 years ago, you still had people, specifically officers, fighting body cameras with it for numerous reasons. Most of us thought they were all really silly. Sometimes they had decent arguments, but in today's world, why as an officer, why in the world would you not want to wear a body camera? To me, having the video, not only to justify and back up what the officer's doing, so many disciplinary actions, so many internal investigations, the body camera is everything. It tells the complete story. And it also, I think, which I'd love your take on, we finally have a way to somewhat let the public experience what these officers go through in their daily job. We've had some TV shows that have documented it. A lot of them have been pulled off the air for a number of reasons. But the body camera, at least for the people that are involved in those situations, it really gives a touch of, hey, I'm there with the officer. It allows us to see what the officers go through, how they embrace that. Do you think and feel that those type of technologies need to be more public, more where the public can go and say, hey, let me see what's going on. Let's get the public involved with, you know, the reality is that, what, 90, 95% of the people are never engaged with law enforcement outside of maybe a routine traffic stop. But the majority of citizens don't have those deep encounters with law enforcement. A lot of people always assume the worst. Is this video technology a good way to not only let the public see what our men and women of law enforcement do and engage with, but also use that as, hey, a lot of what these people do, the majority of what they do is positive things. It's helping people. It's serving people. It's not all about making arrests. You know, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll probably go out on a limb here, Casey. And there's probably not very many police chiefs around the country that will kind of support this idea, but I'm with you 100%. I think as a police department, really, you should have nothing to hide. You know, if you want to make those videos, live videos, I think we can get around some of the privacy issues. And you always hear, well, it's privacy. And when you enter somebody's house, there are probably some privacy issues depending on the nature of the call and those different kinds of things. I think we could probably get around those. But I think that that certainly video gives us a distinct advantage in that. Some of the things that you haven't touched on that I think video also helps us on, you know, from a management point of view, is we can have a quicker resolution of internal investigations and complaints. One of the mistakes that I think that compromise the trust with the citizens that we make as leaders, and I understand it, is we don't resolve those things as quickly as possible. And so really, as you know, and as probably most of the public knows, we hold on to those videos, but they will come out in a public records request, and you have to release them. So you don't have to release them right away, but eventually they're going to come out. So what's to hide? So my take on it is, and really I'm not in the majority by a lot of police chiefs in doing this, is just to go ahead and release that video because it's going to come out. It's going to come out anyway. And if you've done something wrong, I think the citizens would, and we don't do a very good job in this. Let's just admit our mistake and say, hey, we'll do a better job next time. And I think that if we did that, you know, throughout government, I think we would be a little better off. Video also helps us with training. We can do some of those different kinds of things. You can take some of those video things and take them back into the department and give it to your training division. They can do some analytics on that, and it can help out some of those different kinds of things. And of course, the accountability, you talked about that. I think that that's important. Not only does it hold us accountable, but it holds the department and, you know, the officers accountable. But it also protects us too, right? We can use it to our advantage with a lot of times the citizens don't know what kind of job we're doing. Well, we can use that media and that body cam to our advantage, really, and I think start sharing it. And how could we do that? Well, you know, I don't think we do a good job. We're doing a better job, but I don't think we do a good job using the media to our advantage. I mean, we're doing some social media. Most departments now are on Twitter and Facebook and all of those media outlets. And a lot of them communicate that way, and that's great. But I don't think we do a good job of telling the great stories that we do. And I think, again, all of those things that you said, you know, we've talked about it at IGIS and public-private partnerships and sharing information and those things. But let's not also, you know, in the global picture, look at all of our other public safety things and friends too, whether it's emergency management, whether it's fire, or any of those different disciplines. Video is important to all of them. And I think it's important for them to see what stress situation that they were in. Was the person screaming or hollering, or did they have a knife? Were they coming at the officer? Were they coming at the fire paramedic? All those things are important to try to let the public know the story and the good job that all of public safety does on a daily basis.
Yeah. One thing that you talked about that I'd like to see if you can expand on, especially as your experience as being a former police chief. You know, we hear a lot about community policing now, and how can we bridge or repair the damage between law enforcement in the communities they serve? And technology seems to, whether it's video, analytics, some data modeling, where it's as easy as ever, and it's only going to get more easy now for police chiefs and sheriffs to be able to share with the community, this is what's going on within our department, where it's not this idea that it's law enforcement versus the community. Like, we're all together. We're all one. It's our family. It's our friends. It's our brothers, our sisters, our kids that are part of these departments. Well, I think technology now gives these departments the ability to say, hey, community, this is what we're doing. This is what's going on. And these problems we're facing, it's not law enforcement problems. It's our community problems. These things are affecting all of us. They're hurting all of us with it. And it's not just up to law enforcement to solve the problem. Yeah, law enforcement's got to respond to these instances, but a lot of this will only get solved with the community. And I personally, and I could be wrong, I want your opinion, is that until the communities get involved, until the communities really understand what's taking place and what's going on, it's going to be very difficult to do that. Well, technology is giving that ability to chiefs, giving that ability to really let the community take an inside look of what's going on in these departments, where the gaps are, what are the things we do well, what are the things we're struggling with, how can the community help and embrace that? What's your thoughts on that?
I would agree with you 100% on that. I mean, the basic underlying pin of the community policing is the police of the community and the community is the police. So we have to work together on that. And I think that over time, you know, some of those relationships have probably eroded. And in some agencies and some communities, they've eroded a lot. All that trust starts deteriorating, and then you lose your community. So, and I think video is just one example. Like I indicated before, I don't think we have anything to hide in police work. And the more we get the community involved, I think the better we are. You know, it would even be nice, I think, and no one's done this yet, is to write a program just like the traffic that we all use every day, or most people use every day, with Waze, and just have that as part of our department. So that I don't see anything wrong with knowing, you know, we have an officer at this location and he's there, or we have an officer over here or over there. It's not compromising an investigation. It's just our officers on the street. The other point I think that I would like to make is that I think the community really embraces the police, about 95% of the community, and most of the time. I mean, if you just look at what our TV shows are doing every single night, there's all of these law enforcement shows on, and they're just getting more and more and more. People watch them, and the reason they watch them, I think, is because not only are they interested in what the police are doing, that they kind of respect the police. And I think some of those things are cut a little bit short. So I think the meaning that, you know, sometimes they wonder why they didn't get their Miranda warnings as quickly as they should have, or what that two-pronged test is for the Miranda warnings. I think we can overcome some of those misconceptions in police work with video, but we have to open it up to the citizens, and I don't see anything wrong with it, but I'm sure I'm a retired police chief that's out there a little bit when I say that.
Yep. I think this next question I'm going to ask you is a topic that is going to be a conversation all of in itself for another episode. But one thing I'd like for you just to give a brief thought on is, you mentioned the TV shows, you mentioned the movies and stuff. And as somebody that's in the business from the technology side, you know, there's so many times I hear people talking about what they saw on TV and they're shocked because they couldn't believe law enforcement could do that. And it takes everything in my power not to interject and say, there's a difference between what you see on TV in reality. As a former chief and someone that's still very active, how big do you think the gap is between what the public assumes and thinks law enforcement can do from a technology side versus what they can actually do? I have my opinion, but, you know, as a former chief, I'd like to get your thoughts on how far you think that gap is.
Well, I think it's a pretty large gap. And I think that the TV and Hollywood and the movies, you know, they help make that gap a little larger, because they have a short period of time. And we in law enforcement don't always have that short period of time. In some cases, we can eventually do some of those things that they say, but it just, you know, it doesn't happen in 2 or 3 seconds. A good example of that is rapid DNA, which is a great tool that the technology's come out to help us with. But it takes us a little bit of time to do that rapid DNA. Another is, you know, something that you're familiar with is with data sharing and records management systems and those things. A good thing like facial recognition. Sometimes we can't, you know, take that little facial recognition and have it go through the computer and poof, there's your suspect. It usually takes a little bit longer than that. And I think that, you know, that's good stuff. I mean, we can eventually do that, but then I think it kind of goes back to, you know, some of the things that we talked about a little earlier that I think is concerned about is policy. What's the policy, you know, behind that? And then, you know, I think sometimes these people think, well, golly, if they can do that, are they really Big Brother? Or are they really into our house? And you know, none of those things are the case. So I think that gap expands twofold. In some cases, it may, you know, hurt our trust with the community. And then the other way that I think that you were getting at is it increases and there's over expectations on what a police officer could do. And maybe that's just as simple as if somebody breaks into your car or breaks into your house. And, you know, the TV shows can come up with fingerprints and suspects like that. And oftentimes we can't even lift a print or have the ability to do that. And then back to, again, what you said, you know, chances are that's the only time that they'll have interaction with a police officer. And we're not fulfilling their expectations. And so when they leave that house, they have a bad taste in their mouth. And they say, you know, we give them these tools and they're not doing the job we're paying them for. And it leaves them with a bad taste in their mouth.
Yeah. And I agree. I think there's a whole bunch of different topics along this way that we can definitely talk about for a whole segment on it. Well, cool. I think we're at 30 minutes is our slot. I greatly appreciate the time, Carl, a lot of great information, and we will definitely do this again. So thanks for your time, Carl. Great information and see you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Casey.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X, and don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.